You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's happening, Chicago Bears fans? This is T-Formation Conversation. I'm your host, Lester Wildfong, and I am joined today by a special guest, longtime friend of mine, Dave Scarborough, who has coached for 20-plus years at both the high school and the youth level. He knows his X's and O's. He knows his scheme stuff. And there's been some recent stuff going on around Bears Twitter, around the Bears social media stuff, where there's just some topics I wanted to get him on and pick his brain about and kind of help educate me and educate the masses as well. So, Dave, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, Lester. Thank you for having me on.
That's all good, man. So, like I said, you coach for over 20 years, youth and high school. And, you know, you started way back when was you were part of Glenn Kozlowski's first high school coaching staff. That was at Wakanda, correct?
Yes.
And coach, you actually
in North Chicago in what used to be the old Holy Cross. It was a school called Mother Gearin, and they closed it down.
Oh, it's gone now?
Yeah, they closed it.
Oh, man. So you followed Kaz to three different spots.
Yes.
That's pretty good. And you've always worked in the offensive side of things, whether with quarterbacks, O-line, you know, running back. So you've coached.
I've coached with Kaz, and our original system was the West Coast offense. And I learned a lot from him back in the days when Norm Chow was at USC. We got a lot of things from him, and, you know, not to name drop or brag or whatever, but yeah, we've seen a lot. I annually attend the Glazer clinics.
Yeah.
If anyone knows what those are, I try to stay current, and I usually show up at those in the Chicago area, and I sometimes go down to St. Louis to that one.
This is not new for us. Like me and you talk football all the time.
Yes.
So, like, you know, like when I first started my podcast, this is, I'm not even sure, 4, 5, 6 years ago when I was with V Sporto, I actually had you on that show a few times.
Yes.
But we just haven't had a chance to connect and do it on the new channel here. So that's why I wanted to get you on. And the big reason is, like, we're talking about, like, some of the mechanics stuff out there with quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. There's this meme going around where it kind of shows Twitter. Everyone's got an opinion.
I love
Justin Fields mechanics, right?
I love that meme.
You know, it's like, I know just enough to be dangerous about certain topics, but I wanted to bring you on because you've coached quarterbacks. You know, you've been to a bunch of clinics with coaching quarterbacks. You know, I wanted to get your take on how some fans are so worried about the mechanics of Justin Fields. So, you know, I'm going to give you the floor. And I know anyone that knows you're like a wind up toy. I get you going, you're going to go. So
yeah, I know.
This give is your time.
Give me that when you need me to stop.
I'll give you this here. So basically, I just want you to explain a little bit from a coaching standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
What is your take on people worrying about Justin Fields' upper body with his throwing motion? What's your take on that?
Okay, Lester. So you know me, and I'll go back to our conversations we've had privately a little bit. So you've already heard this, but I will give everyone else my spiel. I'm a big West Coast offense guy, or was. I'm an air raid guy now, is my offense I prefer. But I studied Bill Walsh because he was my coaching idol, and I was in that offense when I first started learning. And Bill Walsh, who I think is the greatest quarterback guru of all time, and that's just my opinion. But anyway, he always talked about, he never said anything about the quarterback arm slot or how they threw it. And I was listening actually to a clinic online that he had recorded that a friend sent me. And you're a lot of people don't understand this about quarterbacks, is your throwing power and your throwing accuracy all starts with your footwork. So the footwork is the biggest issue that a lot of quarterbacks have. And you have like your plant leg and what I call your drive leg. And you want to twist your hips or spin your hips to get the velocity on passes. So Bill Walsh used to say this thing about he does not care about a guy's arm slot. Once they've reached the NFL, the only thing you can really do is clean up their footwork to where their post leg and their drive leg are aligned and their footwork is aligned to where they're throwing with accuracy and velocity. As long as your accuracy and velocity are good, your throwing motion, you can't really fix that. You know, and all, I've seen the thing where people have shown the video of his arm. That's all BS. You know, whatever way he learned how to throw, he knows how to throw. He did not get any of the accolades. He did not have his success with throwing inaccurately or without velocity. So to me, as long as his velocity and his accuracy are okay, which they have been, he's a very accurate quarterback. He threw, I believe, for over 65% at Ohio State. He was very accurate last year when we saw. I did not see, put an example, Mitchell Trubisky, not bring up Ghost of the Past, but when you watch Mitch Trubisky, the ball would sail on him. It would eat worms, as I always say. He would throw it into the dirt. It's because his footwork, and Lester, we mentioned this many times when we talked about it. To me, they could never fix his footwork to where his feet were putting him in a good position to throw the ball. So if you think of a quarterback's throwing motion and you see the hips rotating, the arm is just kind of like the whip coming after. Yeah. So this whole notion about arm strength and arm slots is, to me, it's, you know, yes, would I like him to throw like, okay, I'm going to age myself here, the most beautiful thrower I've ever seen of a football.
I know where you're going with here. I know. Todd Marinovich. Oh, my God. That's your guy.
Hey, he may have stunk as a quarterback or whatever, but he was the most technically sound. Yeah. He was the most technically sound, beautiful thrower I've ever seen. So even if you throw like that, I mean, your mechanics are fine, but if your arm slot is off, you look back on guys like Vince Young, who was not a great NFL quarterback, but he was a great college quarterback because he had velocity and accuracy and he could run. You look at Jeff George, you look at that, hell, even Dan Marino. I mean, there's so many guys you can count on your hands, guys that had perfect mechanics. And I don't even think Peyton Manning had perfect mechanics. I think Tom Brady's mechanics were a little better, but anyway, you get my point.
As far as the mechanics, like you're talking about, like when Justin Fields was coming out, there was a lot of talk about his, some people called it a hitch in his motion and in his delivery. So from a coaching standpoint, I know you can't really do too much about the release. Yeah, he throws how he throws, but there's been some talk this offseason where some people think that they're working on his speeding up his release. Is that something that you can work on from a coaching standpoint?
Yeah, yes, you can, because in that aspect, it comes from your ball placement where you're holding the ball.
Okay.
Like if you're holding it too high, holding it too low, and then how close or far away from your body will dictate how big of a – you see
– the loop in the arm, yeah.
Yeah, but his arm – you don't want to have your arm do this to come back up to throw the ball. Yeah. In reality, you want to have the ball to where you just pop it back to where you're going to throw it.
And for the guys listening to this podcast, make sure you come back through. If you want to see Dave Scarborough's visuals, he has a great job visualizing this. It's actually on our YouTube channel, Second City Gridiron.
Right.
But to your point, I know a lot of experts, you know, in the process, you know, for the draft Knicks, they mm-hmm. talk about they want a J motion, you know, and Justin Fields yeah. kind of his is more of a more
I call like, it L, but yeah,
and, you know, it's just about the fluidity of the motion. But like you said, a lot of it's where you start your motion from. That's how you speed things up. And to that point as well, last year Justin Fields fumbled a lot, and I think part of that was because of where he held the ball. So I think by him holding the ball a little tighter to his body, you know, being in a more ready place to throw, that could cut down those fumbles too, right?
When I worked with my kids, I call them, they want to be cool. You know, they want to have the ball down here by the belt loop. You know what I mean? They want to look like they're you know, getting ready to do a gunslinging thing on, you know, at the OK Corral on one day. But they have their hands really low. And the problem with having your hands low is you run into those. Because not only one thing that it brings, it elongates your throw because you have to bring it back up to your shoulder, which is what I was talking about, but your ball security, when your hands are down at your side, you're more susceptible to guys that are rushing the passer, the more power they're coming down with their SWAT, the most power they'll have is at the bottom of their SWAT. So when you come, when you have the ball up in your solar plexus, about 2 or 3 inches under your chin, you have better ball security because the guys coming rushing the passer cannot chop you as easily.
I never heard it explained that way. That makes so much sense from a physics standpoint. If the ball's lower,
right,
as a guy playing defense, you know, you're generating your SWAT, and the SWAT picks up steam and more power as you SWAT down. So the lower it is, the more power that SWAT is. If you hold the ball higher, the SWAT's not getting, doesn't have as much physics behind it. Mm-hmm. So there's not as much power in the SWAT. I never heard it explained that way.
Yeah. And also when we do drills with our guys, or when I coach, we would teach that you cover your shoulder to the SWAT, okay, and dip under the SWAT. So if I feel that SWAT, I'll dip my shoulder, and my shoulder pad will cover the tip of the ball, and guys can't get to the ball as easily. So there's a lot of little drills you can do, and we call it – I forgot what we called the exact – I call it the step up, where I just tell them step up and guards. You know, just guard
coaches, with your shoulder. Coaches call drills – 20 different things for the same drill. So it's hard for
dude, I called it the quarterback protect. I just said, guys, we're going to work on protecting the ball. Okay. you know, but I'm sure someone has some fancy coaching name for it. I don't. But I just tell them to roll their shoulder into a SWAT when they feel, and you step through the SWAT, because the guy's trying to SWAT you, he's not tackling you. You can run through the SWAT and escape front door, back door.
Okay. So along with the stuff with the upper body, with the arm motion, you know, you talked about how it's mostly the feet, you know, and this kind of goes to the point of, there's a lot of talk about making off platform throws.
Yes.
Pat Mahomes, Zach Wilson, you know, the Justin Fields, that's what, like, the big thing is, everyone wants to know if you can throw the ball. And again, that goes along with, are you accurate when you're going left, when you're going right? You know, a lot of it is the hip torque you're generating, the direction you're throwing. It's all about, you know, because you're rarely in a perfectly clean pocket with perfect mechanics.
Right.
This is the NFL. It doesn't happen that often. You're usually on the move. You're going sidearm three quarters. So again, that goes points to your hips and your feet.
Yeah. And so this is a good point you bring up. So everyone sits there and says off platform throws. Your mechanics literally go out the window when you do off platform throws. It is really very, there's one key thing that you do in off platform throws. And I'll explain this to the audience, because, you know, we've talked about this. As a right-handed thrower, my hips are open to the right. As if I'm a left-handed thrower, my hips are open to the left when I finish my drop back. So if I'm rolling to the right side, my hips are already open, and I can get velocity, torque, and all the things we talk about as being a good passer. If you look at Patrick Mahomes, you never see him do a no-look pass running left. And I'm going to explain to you why. Is because he can't torque his body that way and still torque his hips to get around. You can't no-look rolling left. You can't do it if you're a right-handed quarterback. You just can't. But when he's rolling right, he can have his hips open. And now with the finish of his throwing motion, he can be looking where his hips are open and throwing back across his body. So I've discussed this before with Lester. When you – Justin Fields – okay, so the 49er game last year was a perfect example if anyone wants to go back and watch it. The pass he threw to number 18 to James. The
touchdown pass, yeah. Beautiful.
He's rolling left, and you have to be a tremendous athlete to do this. He's rolling left. And he flips his hips, and then he throws like a sidearm off balance, looking off balance. It was not off balance. It was not off balance because he flipped his hips, and his footwork was amazing on that. And if you go back and look at the torque and everything and the ball placement, that will give you an idea of the importance of your hips. If he was running and he just didn't flip his hips, his flips would have been open to the sideline. He never could have made that throw as a right-handed quarterback going left.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean we saw him make a lot of nice plays. I mean, there were a lot of positive last year.
His footwork is always lined up with his hips. Justin Fields, being a good athlete and playing quarterback for so long, whoever has coached him has done a really good job. His hips are always where his plant leg and his drive leg are going in the same direction. And we talk about the aim shoulder. You can't throw a ball without your off shoulder following your throw shoulder. So okay. Your off shoulder is kind of where you're aiming. If you're throwing with just your arm, first of all, you're not going to last in the NFL very long because you're not going to be able to be accurate or have a lot of velocity just throwing us a arm ball.
That makes sense. So one more thing about the mechanics. And there's been a lot made this offseason about how there was a photo taken at camp and it showed Justin Fields, his footwork when he's under center. And yes. They talked about how it's changed. At some point it was staggered, you know, the left was back or the right was back or it's even. I want you to talk a little bit about why does it matter where your feet are staggered when you're under center? Why does that matter, especially when it comes to the offense the Bears are going to run this year?
Well, this is a great point, and there's twofold reason for it. One, I don't know this, so I'm not a Bears coach. I don't know this. But one of them could be that the footwork of the guard was interfering, but I don't think so because they don't do a lot of pulling and gap schemes. But they may, I don't know. But the most important reason his feet are staggered is because the scheme that I heard they're going to run, I've heard the coaches talk about outside zone.
Outside zone, yeah.
For a quarterback to get away from center and get out to the meet point with the back or the track point of the back has to be about, you know, over the outside leg of the tackle, I would say, B gap, wide B gap. And you have to be able to get out there. And if your feet are even, you're going to have to waste a step to step to open to that. If your feet are staggered, say if it's going left, you can just pivot on the foot that's already planted and then step with the if it's going to the opposite way of the stagger, you can just step with the stagger, and now you've already gained a step on the running back. And it works out timing, and it works out for all kinds of bootlegs and things like that. If you're going to drop straight back, it's also – we used to do this with guys in the West Coast offense because the first belief was to take that first step. You wanted to get as many yards as you could on that first step. If we had a kid who could take that first step back and be at like 5 yards even, which is rare. But if you could get a guy who could just make that one step to get away from the line that quick off of one step, that's what we were really searching for. And then your three-step drop, you're back there and you've got more depth and more, obviously, more farther away from the line, which makes pass rush a lot harder.
Like when three-step, five-step, seven-step, when it comes to those step drops, like you said, that first step's all about the depth.
Yes.
Because steps two and three are basically gather steps to get yourself in a position to throw. So especially in the quick game, you know, the first step's got to be deep because step two, step three is basically you're gathering yourself to prepare to throw.
And you're getting – some people teach it with a hitch. I used to just teach it. You just hit that third step and you put your plant leg to the side that you're going to work. Yeah. And that's how I taught it. But there's, like you said, a million different ways. But I used to like to get my guy and say, I used to have a drill we would do where we'd have straight line in between their legs and they drop back. And if you were going to work the right side and you tell me right or left, you better have that post leg on the side that you're going to be working. Because to me, that naturally sets up your footwork. And it was a good way to teach kids.
And this is more for like the straight drop back stuff. When it's play action, it kind of changes. Everything's different. Oh,
well, this is what I'm going to tell you. With like we were just talking about the stretch. So now when you get that look and the Bears are going to design boots and stretches off of that, now you can get that ball out there and kind of really sell it because your footwork looks the exact same on a stretch on any kind of run play as it would. You know what I'm saying? So another reason they switched his footwork, so it looks to the defense, it looks the same.
Which is the beauty of a Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan type system, which is a great segue because that's what we're going to talk about now, the evolution of the Shanahan offense. And I mean, we haven't really heard come out and say, hey, we're running this type of offense. But like you said, they've made a lot of references to the outside zone scheme. They made a lot of references to that. You know, Luke Getsy, you know, with Getsy, he comes from, you know, that system, you know, that's where he's schooled in. And, right. and the Mike Shanahan offense, it's like at least half the league, it seems like, is running a variation of it. And it's not all the same thing. I mean, it's his version. There's the Sean McVay version, you know, but basically Mike Shanahan, legendary coach, you know, this is not a West Coast offense.
No, it's not.
You know, I saw an interview with Kyle Shanahan and someone said it to him and he was pissed. You know, he's like, this is not my dad's offense is not the West Coast offense. There are some similar principles, but it's a little different. And the big part of it is because of the, like we talked about, the outside zone scheme, a lot of the run plays marrying to the play action pass, a lot of play action passes here. And this all fits into what Justin Fields can do best.
Well, it's funny to segue into that, to explain it a little more on the West. So anyone in football, and this is, we've talked about this too. There's this thing called quick game. Everyone runs the quick game of the West Coast offense. No one else. It's been like that forever. So when you say it's not the West Coast offense comes back, and it isn't. It's not. I'm trying to explain the difference. The West Coast offense comes back to now when you're 5 and 7 step drop things, what are those? And that's where I think Coach was talking about it not being the West Coast offense, because there's concepts like the flood concept, the over concept. There's different concepts of the 5-step game. Everyone in football, no matter what you run, whatever you claim to run, you know, since the late 90s, everyone runs quick game the same. And that'll get into RPOs, but we'll talk about that another time. But that's what I was going to tell you. His point was that's not the West Coast offense. This offense is based off of boot action, off of the outside zone, and it's based off of, I believe, and I, like I said, I feel uncomfortable saying this because I'm not a Bears coach, but from what I perceive, what I've seen, I think that they run a vertical stretch offense in their dropback game.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of variations of it.
Yeah.
Sean McVay, LaFleur, the guy in the Bengals, they all kind of run a variation of it. Go ahead.
I think their dropback, their 5 and 7 step dropback game is vertical stretch.
Okay. Because with Getsy, he's also schooled in the Joe Moorhead.
Yes.
At Penn State. So that's a kind of, he has that also as well from his time when he was there, plus the time with Mike McCarthy with the Packers. But the last few years has been with LaFleur, which is a Sean McVay disciple. And, you know, Bears fans have seen this offense for a long time. And we've seen, you know, several quarterbacks run it. You know, Justin Fields, though, with his, you know, 4.4 speed, that's like an added dimension. I mean, we've seen this offense take Matt Schaub to 3 Pro Bowls.
Well,
you know, this offense has been successful. It's proven. You know, let's just hope it's going to be what we hope it to be.
I'm going to do you one better, Lester. Do you remember when they had this guy named RG3?
Oh, yeah. Washington, yeah.
Yeah, and I know people like to crap on him because he had injuries and this and that, but if Justin Fields can get down, I mean, that's the kind of athletic explosion you're looking at out of this offense. So RG3, didn't he rush for like almost 1,000 yards when he was a rookie or something?
I know he had a big year. I think he may have been a Pro Bowler that year too. That was, of course, Mike Shanahan was the head coach there. I think Kyle Shanahan was the OC there. So he was running the Shanahan offense, obviously. And that's what's in Chicago now.
But, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. The athleticism that Justin Fields has, you can get maybe that kind of production out of him. And I think that you're going to get more because I think Justin Fields is a superior passer than what RG3 was.
So real quick, while we're on the topic of the offense, so with Sean McVay, he obviously has his own coaching tree built off it. Are there a lot of differences in the strict Shanahan version as opposed to the McVay version that you're aware of?
I would say we talked about this. I would say formation wise, because he runs. I don't know if there's any youth coaches out there or whatever. He runs Sean McVay. When you look at his formations that he runs, like the Bears, I believe, are going to run what I call strong and weak, and what me and Lester used to call blue and green.
Some offset eye stuff possible.
Yeah. You're going to have an offset eye kind of, and I think that's what the Bears are going to run. That's why we got blasting game. But Sean McVay uses his wide receivers and tight ends in a double wing look, And that's because his background is, I told Lester I was going to throw this in there. Sean McVay was the offensive player of the year in high school in Georgia. And he beat out this guy that we all know very well named Calvin Johnson for high school player of the year. And he comes from his base roots when he was in high school. He ran the double wing in high school. So I know that he really likes that formation, and he's married a lot of his concepts into that. And you can marry it into that. I don't know. I don't think that Sean McVay runs as many counters with like a gap scheme with guys pulling to offset it, where I think the Bears may get into more gap scheme married with their outside and inside zone.
Like a lot of those wham block coming back across. I think that's,
well, like the two pullers, like you'll start like one way, like you're going outside zone. And then you'll wrap either the fullback in the guard back around, or it's wing tight end in the guard back around.
Yeah.
You know, when teams start overflowing to the stretch and the boot actions.
Yeah, and that's again where those actions come into play is that it's, especially with a guy like Justin Fields, those backside defenders, they got to really be honest now.
Yeah, they can't cheat, man. It used to be if you had a statue back there, what we call an unmobile quarterback, you could send that backside C-gap player down the line. And if you had your guys be able to, you know, slow down or post up what we call the running, the stretch, you could get the backside guy to run down and make the tackle. And if you've heard Coach Flus talk about this, if you have a really good three technique, and he could beat that backside double team, he could do it, because we talked about this when the Broncos used to run it. They got into a lot of, not hot water, but a lot of people hated playing the Broncos because they would cut that backside gap guys for the cutback.
Yeah, back in the day, it was always backside cut blocks. Was that Coach Coach Alex Gibbs? Was he the O-line coach back then?
Alex Gibbs.
That's when I first started following the outside zone concepts, and that's where I started like, man, this is I've always liked the style of offense. And, you know, yeah, as an old lineman, you know, cutting those backside guys, I can see why defenders hate it.
Yeah.
It sucks. You know, and, you know, there's ways to teach the cut where it's safer, but, you know, it's dangerous in the trenches, man.
It is. And you know what's funny is we talk about this, Lester, and I know, don't kill me, Bear fans, but me, I always tell Lester, my favorite offense in the NFL to watch is Sean McVay's. I love watch. If we can do anything close to that, we're going to have a really nice offense. I tell Lester this all the time. When I'll call him on Sunday when I got Sunday tickets on the Bears ain't playing. Lester, are you watching the Rams? Did you see that play they just ran? And it's like, oh my God, it's my favorite word, coach porn, you know?
Yeah. Well, like with the Rams stuff, they do a lot of stuff with jet sweep motion and jet sweep stuff. I think they lead the league in that.
I love what they do.
And then we saw Nagy the last few years where he would run a lot of jet sweep stuff, but the timing to me always seemed like he was off. Like there was never an actual threat to where the receiver was going to get the ball, because by the time they snap it, he was passed.
Gave the jet sweep 1 out of 10 times. I mean,
yeah, and it's like, if you're going to show the look, you know, that right. This is why I'm excited to see what Getsy does, because he comes from a school of thought where everything is married off the other. This look has to look like this look because the play action has to match. And I'm just hoping we don't see any more of those random, like, what the hell was that play call? It made no sense because there's nothing in the Bears playbook that works off it.
We're going to give them a counter, no deception, even though we never run the counter.
Yeah, exactly. So
we're gonna pull both linemen, even though we never do that on a run play.
Oh, this is worse. I'm going to take a quick commercial break for our guys in the podcast side of things, so stick around.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And we are back. I am talking with Dave Scarborough, a longtime friend of mine. I've known him since high school. So we're talking
high school teammates.
I'm not going to age us, but that's a long time ago. So I got Coach Dave on because he knows his X's and O's. And I wanted to make sure I have a chance to talk a little X's and O's with him. I talk with Dave all the time. So this is not new for us, but it's new for the audience. That's why I wanted to get him on here. And we've been talking a lot about, you know, the Shanahan-esque type offense. And we talked about it, a lot of outside zone stuff. And as far as the Bears running backs go, we got Montgomery, we got Herbert, we got a few other guys they signed here. And it seems like they really want to do that kind of stuff. We've heard Coach Flus talk about it. We've heard Coach Getsy talk about it. They've all talked about the outside zone stuff. So from a coaching standpoint, what does the outside zone principle stuff do? What kind of stress does that put on a defense?
Well, what it really does is it gets movement. It gets you flow movement to a side. And what it does is your defensive linemen, after a course of time, we all know this, if you've been running, it basically makes your defensive linemen run like 20 extra yards every play almost. You know, because you have to, once the offensive linemen get moving, it's not much stress on the offensive linemen, but the linebackers and the defensive linemen have to keep running to contain their gaps with the speed kind of the running back. So if you look at it, it's almost like you do a moving wall. And yeah, what the running back's aim point is, this is the rules for the outside zone running back. You run to the sideline unless someone makes you turn it up sooner. So with the inside zone, if anyone's familiar with that, we have this thing where we call bounce, bang, bend. So bouncing would be going outside. This is for inside zone. And banging it is like just seeing a hole.
First hole.
Bend is where you bend back. Whereas the outside zone stretch, you're not really bending back. You're either banging it in the B gap or – you'll see it right away. It'll split because somebody hasn't – one of the linemen are thirsty and wanted Gatorade and didn't run his gap over. And you'll see it. Or you will just see to the outside, everyone will get a hat on a hat, and now it's a race between you and the inside linebackers to the sideline. And usually they don't win those or they're behind because they have to do a play step to – they have to step and respect their gap on the snap of the ball. So, yeah, that's the reads of the running back. You keep running until someone makes you cut – until someone makes you bang it up in there.
So we're talking about, like, the gaps you're aiming for. Now, like, yes, when they're under center, obviously the B gap is where the B gap is. But as the play develops, like you talk about, the O-line is all driving the same direction. They're moving their guys all the same direction. They're blocking whatever basically crosses their path. So those gaps are still there. They're just moving. Right. They're moving with it. So as the tailback, he's looking for the first hole he sees. And if something opens up, that's when you hear a lot of analysts say, hey, he stuck his foot in the ground and he went. That's what you want. You want decisiveness of the read. When you see it, you got to take it.
Yeah, exactly. And the outside zone is designed for a speed back. You want speed more than anything. Because like I said, eventually it comes down to just being a – if everyone blocks everyone, it's a race to the sideline from the inside linebacker with the running back. And if your running back's faster than that outside inside linebacker, it's going to be a long day for your defense if we can get head on a head. And I was telling Lester this. Bear fans get mad at me all the time on Twitter because I sit there and I go, I don't think – look, David Montgomery is a fantastic back, and he is a good – he's a really good back. I think he's a decent back, but this is not – when you look at – and I base this off – not my opinion. I base this off of what you've seen them draft, what you've seen them sign, and who they've talked about as far as fitting this scheme. I told Lester last year when we drafted the kid Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech, I told Lester, I go, man, I've never seen well, not never, but I have not seen this in a long time, how good of an outside zone runner this guy was. He was fantastic running outside zone. And I'm not trying to slam David Montgomery. I'm just saying that, in my opinion, you look at the back that they – like the kid they drafted, he's like 5'11", 200 pounds, runs a 4.4. The guy they got from Tennessee, Titans, the running back, Darian, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He runs a 4.4. He's 5'10", 200 pounds. So you start to see what they envision for their style. David Montgomery is a great tackle breaker. He's 5'10", 230 pounds, sturdy back. In me and Lesnar's opinion, he's more of an inside zone guy, or if you're going to run a gap scheme, I would think he would fit in with a gap scheme. When I say that, it's a guy pulling, where you have pulling offensive linemen. I think that's the best scheme for him. But anyway, I got off on a tangent. I apologize.
No, it's all good. No, like with Montgomery, he was drafted for an inside zone scheme. That's what the Bears ran under Nagy.
Correct.
So, you know, he did work on his speed a lot last offseason. I'm sure he's doing it again this offseason.
Yeah, but he's not 4.4.
No, he's not 4.4. But like, then let's look at the Packers, for example. The Packers, they have two different running backs right now, and they're very successful in the run game, and they have a guy more speedy and a guy more powerful. So that's not to say it can't work with David Montgomery and with Herbert, but, you know, like you said, it does seem like the Bears are pulling in, like you said, the guy at the free agent, the guy that just drafted Ebner. They are looking to go maybe a little more speed. But on that same token, man, they've really talked up Montgomery. They really love his fit. I mean, he's such a good football player. Stop yourself. You know? I mean, he's a very good football player. We talked about it before, too. Mm-hmm. Part of what a veteran running back has to bring to the table is his pass protection.
Yes.
And last year, David Montgomery was pretty good in that area. So, you know, I'm not sure if there's an extension on table. That's probably, you know, this is not the podcast for that, because that's a conversation to have at some point. But we both like Montgomery, the football player.
Yes.
But we can also say he may not be the greatest fit for the scheme, but the Bears could make it work.
And what's going to dictate this too, like you said about the big back up in Green Bay, it's going to be based – now, every – you know this, Lester. I'm not telling you, but we're just talking in general. Every scheme, you need a counter run play. You can't just run outside zone every play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, every run play. So, it's going to be very interesting, and one of the things we can watch for in preseason is to watch if they are running any kind of counter gap scheme, or are they running inside zone. And that'll tell you, because like you mentioned, David Montgomery is an inside zone. I love him on an inside zone scheme. So maybe when he's in the game, they're going to have inside zone type plays for him. And you can still inside zone and get play action. It's just not the boot action to get out of the pocket. And Lester brought up a great point that his pass blocking, I think, is very underrated. I think he's very good in the pass game. I think he's good in the pass game, too. He although is. The kid they drafted from Baylor is a dude. In the pass game.
Well, like you would talk about the outside zone. Okay. Mm-hmm. The aim point for an outside zone runner is where? The B gap?
The track is usually leading to the B gap.
Okay. And then the inside zone is more A gap.
Yeah. The inside zone is you're looking front side A gap to backside A gap. So when we talk about the inside zone, when you want to bend it, you want to go to the B gap, possibly an extreme C gap, but you never looking for the C gap, just if it leads you there. But the bang is in the A, the front side A.
Yeah.
The bend is to the backside A gap.
Yeah. So if the Bears are going to switch outside zone, inside zone, you know, it's not like they want to have a tell, obviously, with what they're doing here. But from the defensive standpoint, when they're looking at the offense, you know, you really can't tell that until it happens. And it's not like Montgomery's going to only be running a certain play. He could still run the outside
zone. He'll try to run outside zone with him.
He can do both.
I mean, the only thing you're missing, I mean, 4.6 is not slow. I mean, we as fat old Bear fans, we're all like, oh, he only runs a 4.6. Dude, 4.6, you know this, Lester. If you go watch the combine and you put guys together, the difference between 4.6 and 4.4 is a half a step, if that a step maybe. But like, this is why I'm trying to say, it's not that big of a deal. When you're talking about 40 times, you're talking about long speed and being able to be a breakaway type of runner. And hell, you've seen David Montgomery run 80-yard touchdowns. And yeah. I mean, you've seen slower guys than him run 80-yard touchdowns. So basically, it comes down to vision. And it'll be interesting to see if David Montgomery has great vision. Because I think we talk about this too, Luster, all the time. I think vision is the most important thing in any kind of zone scheme.
Yeah, I mean it's not like a lead stuff where you're basically following your fullback to the play. Right. The vision is you know, because that hole could be anywhere.
Right.
And it's all about when you see it, stick that foot in the ground, get your ass upfield and get as many yards as you can. And that's what Montgomery's good at.
Yes. And he's a tackle breaker too. So on the second level, just because you got him in the second level don't mean you're going to stop him in the second level.
All right. That takes to our next thing. I want to talk about how the quarterbacks, some of the reads he makes off those play action. We talk about the outside zone scheme, why it's important. And, you know, we've seen the numbers. Justin Fields last year in play action, his numbers were so much better than the other stuff he did. You know, Justin Fields last year thrived in play action, and he thrived when he was going downfield. Two things that he didn't do a lot of last year, but right. He's good at those things. And I think both those things kind of marry well with what they're going to do with the outside zone. So talk a little bit about how those outside zone boots off of it, what he's looking as a quarterback now. What are some of the plays he's looking to do?
So for real quick, I think I read somewhere that he was the most efficient quarterback in the NFL, I want to say, off of play action passing. Last year,
I'm not sure the numbers, but I know he's up. I'm not sure if he was top, but
yeah, but
his numbers were like when I saw the numbers, I'm like, why the hell are they not running more?
Right, exactly. Like, it makes you wonder, like, who's self scouting, because we should be doing that more.
Yeah,
but anyway, so the basic boot, off of the action, and I don't want to get all in the weeds of schematics. Anyway, you have a front side and a back side. Strong side, usually the strong side of the formation, the tight end is there, and either a fullback or tight end or you tight end, whatever you want to call it, maybe even a wide receiver in some personnel groupings. But when you boot that, you want to get your head back around, and you have what we call levels concepts on the boots. So you want to have a shallow, a medium, and a deep shot. And sometimes it's on the same side. But you want to have levels crossing into the quarterback's field of vision. So if we boot, say we try to run stretch right, a stretch outside zone to the right, you're going to have the tight end come back flat and be in the flat on the side when Justin turns his head. That'll probably be his first read. Then you'll have an over route, which will probably be the wide receiver if it's a wide receiver, wing tight end if it's a wing tight end. Whoever, the number two receiver from the backside is going to come back, and he's going to run the mid-level route. And then you'll have the backside receiver away from the boot will be running either a deep, deep over or a post route. And on the front side, you're going to have the front side receiver either go down what we call stick at the first down marker, or you're going to have him do a comeback, or you're going to have him take the top off, which I see Velus Jones being really good at, but yeah. Just saying. But so the quarterback's going to come around. He's going to peek that whatever route it is to the outside receiver coming to the side he's booting to. Then he's going to go to his check down levels and see just where the hole is in the defense. You're not really reading coverage.
It's all about who pops open off the play action. And that's why we talk about how – those backside defenders are key. So as a coach, you know, up in the booth, when you're watching this,
right.
You know, you're waiting to see how those backside defenders are treating your run action.
And Luster, the linebackers, remember what I told you about the zone, the linebackers have to bail to get to that 4-4 guy to the sideline. So some of them cheat and don't take their read steps. If you catch guys doing that, now those mid-level and deep over routes are tough.
So if your linebackers are flowing with the run action,
right,
and your tight end, who, you know, some Bears fans think is really slow, and you know, and Cole Kmet, if the linebackers are flowing and Cole Kmet is coming across, yeah, that's true. So a guy like Cole Kmet, in theory, should be able to eat a little bit in this offense.
That's why I don't know if you've seen this article. I don't know where I read it. They were talking about blasting game being more active in this offense. It's because what they're going to do is they're going to run this thing called slide also when you have a fullback. and he's going to slide, and then the tight end will have the mid-level route. You know, Cole Kmet, because he's so slow, he only runs a 4.6 or a high 4.6, but, you know, whatever. But
to be fair, you are a Notre Dame guy, so I know that's your guy.
Okay. But I love Cole Kmet. I know you.
But anyway. You know, that brings us up to the fullback. That's actually the last thing I want to talk about. And you talked that article, I think it was Adam Johns in The Athletic. You know, I think it was the Bears running back coach had a quote where he talked about Kerry Blassingame as the fullback. He's not a traditional, you know, just blocking guy.
Just blocking guy.
This guy's a good athlete.
Yes, very good athlete. And I'm going to tell you, the Bear fans know that because he almost took a screen to the house against us.
Yeah.
But on this thing where you have the slide, you'll have like the strong guy and you'll fake the boot. He'll take the step. He'll take a step like he's going to do outside zone. He'll come back under the line and he'll be the check down guy.
Nine, 10 times.
He's going to be wide open in the flat. You'll see this around the goal line, but usually he's wide open because the linebackers have dropped back because they realize it's a boot. If they do, now this is where he comes into play because he can run. He'll be wide open, and the guy's a good athlete, like Lester said. So if your linebackers play loose, we dump down to Kerry Blassingame. If your linebackers come up tight or bite, now we have the mid-level and we have the deep crosser coming. I mean, it's really the beauty of this offense and why me and Lester love it very much, to tell you the truth, is because it really stresses the defense without being overly complicated.
So the fullback in this offense, so to speak, I know as Bears fans, we watched what happened with Nagy. It was Trey Burton. It was Jesper Horsted. You know, they seemed Jimmy Graham. They wanted that athletic move tight end. Some people call it a joker. In the Bears scheme, they called it the U. In this scheme, the fullback is essentially
the U.
Does the what the U tight end did and what we saw as Bears fans in Matt Nagy's scheme. So a lot of the same stuff they did with him, they can move him around and the wing and play actioning kind of, you know, he's the guy that, like you said, sneaks back across and he's open underneath.
So I'm going to tell you, just like if you watched, we talk about the Shanahan effect. If you watched a lot of 49er games, they have this guy named, a lot of casual fans may not know this. There are still fullbacks in the NFL, but it's a guy named Kyle Juszczyk, who's a very good tight end. And if you watch him, he gets a lot of gadget plays in that offense. And what I mean by slip screens, he gets a lot of little funky, like carries, like inside zone, cross the inside zone carry. He's a very tough player. They love to screen him. He's always like the check down guy. They've designed like wheel routes where they've gotten him on isolated on a slow linebacker because they didn't know he could do that. But if you want to go and watch on your all 22 NFL, whatever, go watch what the 49ers do with that guy and you'll get a taste of what the Bears probably will do with an athletic fullback. And I think that I'm really excited because Luke Getsy keeps saying that he's not running that system. He's going to steal from a lot of other different. I'm really, really excited to see what they do.
Well, they've talked about it since the new staff came in. They're going to build the offense around Justin Fields. They're going to build around his strengths, you know, and the stuff he wants to do. But on the same with the same thing though, it's this style of offense that, you know, they're going to bring it in. It fits exactly what Justin Fields wants to do. Like we talked about the play action stuff. I can't wait to see play action passes more often. Oh, you know,
dude, it's gone. And we have a guy who his best trait is deep ball accuracy. You know what I mean?
Now, on that, he's one of the top guys as far as that goes. And now the Bears have Mooney with great speed, Velus Jones, great speed, Equanimeous St. Brown, who I believe he'll be the starting X for this team, which is fine. You know, he's a legit speed guy. They have several guys that can stretch the defense, that can get downfield. That, well, again, it's not the most sexy names for the Bears receiving core, but Justin Fields said it today in an interview. They like what they got there. They believe in who they have in there, and we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I'm not down on the receiving core the Bears have.
So Lester, you're like, you like little tidbits like this. So Equanimeous St. Brown's father,
another Notre Dame guy, just to be that's your team, just to
yeah. Exactly. But Equanimeous St. Brown, his father is John St. Brown, who was Mr. Olympia a few times.
Yeah.
So he also has his brother who plays on the Detroit Lions.
Lions, yeah. I'm on St. Brown, yeah.
Yep.
Good genes. He never had it, you know, in Green Bay, he never had a great chance to succeed.
Yeah.
Obviously, for obvious reasons. And then with that quarterback over there, he seems to – some guy's getting his doghouse where he doesn't want to go that direction. So I think a guy like St. Brown in the Bears scheme, 30 targets maybe. I mean, he's not going to be the top guy, but as your starting X, you know, he's going to be behind your Z. He'll have targets behind your slot, which is probably Byron Pringle. He'll have targets behind probably the tight end in the back. So he's there to help stretch the defense.
I'm telling you, I think I may be in the minority on this, but for Velus Jones to be the first receiver they took, I think they have some serious – I mean, I hate saying this because when you compare a player to someone that people are like, oh, he said he's this guy. No, I'm not saying he's this guy, but I'm saying he can do some of the things that the kid from the 49ers can. What's his name?
Deebo Samuel. I mean, the Bears have talked about it, that he has some of those same traits.
Lester, have we talked about this? No, we haven't talked about this on here. Deebo Samuel led the NCAA in broken tackles, like run after catch,
yeah,
and yards of separation in the pass game. These are things that should not be taken lightly. He played in the hardest conference in the country, in the SEC.
You're talking Velus Jones.
Yeah, Velus Jones.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good runner after the catch. He's good with the ball in his hand. The Bears have a plan for him. I mean, I'm not sure how much they're going to throw at him off the bat, but
very high.
The Bears have already talked about, you know, they want him involved. So he's their third round draft pick. I'm not expecting him to be, you know, a world beater as a rookie, but
he has he'll
be in the mix.
But he's not a young player either. He's played a lot of football.
Yeah, a lot of football. I mean, that's some knock on him.
Yeah, but I know it's a knock, but I'm telling you, it's not a knock for me. No. He's a mature. He's going to come in and work his butt off. He's not 20 years old thinking he's the greatest thing since slice of bread because he's 20 and he was playing high school football 3 years ago. This guy has had to work his butt off to get where he's at. And I will take work ethic and being hungry over overhyped stardom any day.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I'm optimistic with this Bears season. I'm not expecting a playoff team. I'm not expecting, you know, the offense to be, you know, a big time, you know, top 10 unit, but I'm expecting strides. I'm expecting Justin Fields to kind of show the Bears fans and show the NFL what he is. And a lot of national guys are down on the team. And I'm just, you know, I know it's hard from a perspective of I write about the Bears, cover the Bears, but I just don't see it being as bad as doom and gloom.
What was the clown organization who said they're the 32nd team?
That was one of the ESPN mathematical models had them popping out as the worst team in the league, and it's like,
okay, you need to throw that mathematical model into the trash. Yeah. That's such BS. Because I'm going to tell you right now, even with, and Lester knows this, I'm not getting out over my skis. When the schedule came out, I texted Lester. I told him, I'm like, Bears are going to win 7-9 games. And everybody's like, oh, they're going to win. No, dude, the Bears are going to win probably 7-9 games. And however they're trending is going to be how many they – so say we jump out and we win 10, 11 games. Now the it's like, whoa, where did this come from? If they win like 8 games, people are going to be like, wow, the Bears had a great season. You understand? So I like the expectations being low, but I'm going to tell you this is a 50-50 league. And very little separates you from being a bottom feeder and a top feeder. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the Cincinnati Bengals had the number one pick in the draft, and they just played in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah.
So my point to Bear fans is be vigilant. Don't listen to half of these national pundits. All they do is they go in there and they read, like, who the guy on Twitter, oh, I think the Bears are going to be terrible because they didn't draft my favorite receiver at number 3. You know, whatever, you know, we won't know. None of us will know anything until we see what they're going to do.
It's fun. It should be a fun season. I'm excited. But, hey, I want to thank you for jumping on. This is awesome.
Anytime. You know, I love you. You're one of my oldest friends. And, You're a great, great person, man. Great human being, and I appreciate the opportunity.
So make sure you guys all follow Dave on Twitter at Papa Scarbs. You know, give me a follow on Twitter as well at Will Fong JR. And Dave, you're actually doing some stuff on a Facebook page. You're one of their site experts at the Bear Tracks Facebook page. It's a private group, but you're on there all the time there. Every weekend you're doing something.
Yeah, right? Every week we do a little
football 101 type of thing.
Yeah, we do some X and O's, and he just we get basic questions. If you're in the chat and you ask a question, I'll answer it for you or try to answer it. And, you know, we chop it up over there.
All right, man. And that is it. Until next time.
All right.
Bear down, my friends.
Bear down, baby. Woo, woo.
Nice.